Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, behind every great screen hero, there's an equally iconic and arguably more entertaining baddie. And sometimes the best baddies are the ones you can't help rooting for, especially for them to get away with it. From Tony Soprano to Cersei Lannister, what makes a film villain come alive for us on the screen and makes us, despite ourselves, secretly hope they come out on top? Well, to talk us through her favourite screen baddies that get us on side, I'm joined in studio now by Deirdre Malumbi, pop culture and entertainment expert. Good morning to you. Thanks for coming in.
Morning.
It's impossible to start this conversation without focusing on our own Andrew Scott's performance. He's been doing very well in award nominations, but his performance as Tom Ripley in the Netflix series, his performance perfectly catches what we're about to talk about today. It described as spellbinding by one Guardian reviewer. Let's have a little listen to them in that role before we chat.
And how do you propose I get rid of him, Marge? Throw him off the terrace? Push him in front of a bus? Drown him?
Okay, she'd do it.
Tell him to leave,
Dickie. He can barely swim, you know. He told me. He's terrified of water.
Andrew Scott there. Deirdre, even he loves Ripley.
It's a very sinister show. And I mean, I think that a lot of credit is due to kind of the show as a whole, as well as Andrew Scott's lead performance as Ripley himself. Because I mean, it's really interesting because all of Ripley is set within Italy. And that's a country I think we've seen brought to the screen, whether it's the small screen or the big screen, so many times before. But the fact that it's set in black and white and the cinematography and production design just makes Italy look kind of disorientating or uncomfortable or something. I remember feeling on edge from start to finish. Whereas most shows that I see set in Italy kind of make me feel very relaxed and like, God, I need to book a trip to Italy sometime soon. But Italy, I mean, Ripley is absolutely an excellent show. I think that what Andrew Scott does with this character is that he really captures kind of the pathetic nature of Ripley, but also kind of his clumsiness. And I think that that's part of the charm to the character. And I think Andrew Scott does just have this kind of natural charisma that he kind of oozes onto the screen. But I mean, his character also does these very, very evil things. He does murder people. And it's interesting seeing the blood against the like black and white cinematography. It has like quite a dramatic impact. And they really do drag out those scenes where he murders people. So it's kind of questionable. Is he a villain? Is he an anti-hero? He just seems to be quite evil at times.
Right. So we sympathize with his vulnerability. We kind of nearly see a context for his actions. There's a bit of sort of bit of sympathy, bit of psychoanalysis going on with the viewer looking at the villain. Is that the way it works?
I think so too. And I think as well, Ripley continues this trend that we've seen in a lot of recent media. Like when I look at movies like The Menu or Triangle of Sadness, which has just been added to Netflix, or shows like The White Lotus or Succession, there's been this kind of trend lately where it's very kind of anti the top 1% of people. And we really like to see the downfall of the uber rich. So I think that Ripley kind of captures that kind of ennui that we're seeing at the moment. And he reminds us of something like kind of a Gatsby figure, you know, who kind of makes his own way, or even like Robin Hood, except that instead of, you know, stealing from the rich and giving to the poor, he's stealing from the rich and giving to himself. So there is something kind of admirable in the qualities that he has. And it makes for a really interesting kind of relationship between character and audience.
And what are the tricks that get people on side with anti-heroes or the likes of Ripley?
I think that it's really key to have exquisite casting. You really have to cast the right people in the role. And I think that actors have kind of often like made their career, say if they're unknowns and they get cast as a really great villain. Or there are a number of, examples of actors, take Anthony Starr as Homelander in The Boys, who've kind of managed to rejuvenate their career by playing these great villains. So I think you really need to have great casting, but you also need to have like great writing. You need a script that's going to kind of challenge the viewer, that's going to make the villain quite likable in spite of the fact that they do these morally questionable and sometimes just pure evil things. And I think that villainous characters, they're always more interesting to see on the screen than the hero. They just have a lot more complexity. Oftentimes you see that they come from, you know, difficult circumstances. Maybe they lost a loved one and they turn to villainy in their grief, or they come from impoverished circumstances, which kind of makes you feel empathetic for them. They also often rebel well and break the rules. And I think that, that there's something quite enjoyable about watching that. And they kind of remind us of our flaws and of our humanity. You know, there is a saying that goes, every villain is the hero of their own story. And that's oftentimes the case.
Right. Well, I suppose if you want to get to know their flaws, it's handy to be able to sit in on their psychotherapy sessions, which, you know, was the case with Tony Soprano, who I think everybody loved despite themselves. We're going to listen to a clip here where Tony is eating with his son, Anthony Jr., and his daughter, Meadow, and her boyfriend, Finn, in a restaurant.
So, Finn, you got any plans for the summer? Going back to Mission Viejo to surf or whatever?
Actually, I'm hoping to stay here in the city.
How's summer school going?
It sucks. I did summer school once. You can still have fun.
Casa Carmela is looking at maximum security summer.
Excuse me a minute.
Why don't you cut your mother a break, huh? For the record, she's the one holding this family together in this current situation and all. Read the check, please.
The young man took care of it.
You paid the check?
I figured since you're always so, you know, generous, I should reciprocate.
You're lucky you don't get your head handed to you.
Dad.
Let's get something straight. You eat, I pay.
Mr. Soprano.
No, when you have your own family, you pay. Let's go.
Just take the money.
Who'd have thought buying your father-in-law lunch could, or potential father-in-law, could be so menacing? Look, with Tony Soprano, it's not a spoiler. I think at this stage, people know Tony Soprano is a mafia boss. He's a violent cheat, a ruthless adversary. Why did people love him so much?
I think that James Gandolfini casting is absolute key here. I don't think anybody else could have played that role and brought the kind of charisma and sense of fun that he brings to it. But yeah, he's a very complicated character. You know, he's funny and yet he's conniving. He's short-tempered, but we also see in a number of cases when he's very affectionate and caring, oftentimes with his, you know, two children. He's not a very good husband. He has numerous affairs throughout the Sopranos series, so your heart really goes out to Carmela. But there are a number of reasons why you really do end up on Tony's side. I think part of, you know, the reason is we learn through flashbacks kind of what kind of upbringing he had. His mother is quite joyless and narcissistic, and we see her as a bitter old woman throughout the show. His father was a ruthless criminal, and while he's trying to kind of pull away from that fatherly influence, he also can't help but be impacted by it. I think that the fact that he goes to therapy in every episode of the series really is quite fascinating as well, because I suppose it means that we kind of see him as a figure who is trying to kind of criticize himself, who's trying to analyze what he does and feel some kind of remorse or guilt or attachment to all of that. And he really is trying to better himself. You know, that's what we associate therapy with. It's trying to kind of understand why you do the things that you do and perhaps make better decisions. But at the same time, you know, throughout the series, he does some awful things. We remember the fates of his unfortunate nephew, Christopher, or cousin Tony B. I have to say, for my money, when in the second last series, what he did to Adriana, I'll
right.
never forget.
Okay. Yeah, the
show is very old by now, okay. If you haven't
right.
seen it.
Okay, well, there's probably a whole
no
new generation. It's not a man's world. There's also female baddies who also attract people for their own reasons as well.
I have to mention here Cersei Lannister. In fact,
yeah,
when
pardon
it comes
my
to
mispronunciation there at the top.
In fact, the Game of Thrones characters in general have these really interesting kind of moral dynamics, and you really do kind of change your loyalties with which characters you end up on side on and which characters you end up against. But I think Cersei Lannister, when it comes to the portrayal of kind of complicated villainous females on the TV screen, this is kind of a go-to example. The very first episode saw her in an incestuous relationship with her twin brother in an action that kind of led to tossing a child out of the high tower window in the pilot episode. And by the very final episode, as she faces her demise, you know, the city that she worked so hard for is collapsing in all around her. Again, I'm talking about shows that are years and years old, so please don't text in saying spoilers.
And there's still room there to like her?
I think there is. Yeah, I think that you do end up kind of crying for her because you do kind of admire her ambition. And throughout the series as well, we see some like awful things happen to her children. And I think there is something, and maybe it's similar with seeing Tony Soprano as a father. There is something about when the kids are involved and you see these kind of good mothers and good father figures that you do end up kind of sympathizing with them a bit in spite of yourself.
All right, we have 30 seconds. So pick another baddie and tell us why we love them. I suppose, you know, bringing it home to maybe another Irishman, Cillian Murphy. There's one anyway.
Cillian Murphy in Peaky Blinders. Yeah, he's brilliant. And I mean, throughout that show, again, you kind of see him do these awful, morally questionable things, but you also end up on side with him a lot. A couple of other Irish mentions have to mention Jack Leeson in the role of Joffrey Baratheon, again, in Game of Thrones. Absolutely fantastic. And one last shout out to Andrew Scott as Moriarty in Sherlock. It was kind of the role that really kicked off his career and, you know, delightedly. So he's one of those villains that we love to hate throughout that show.
All right, back shortly with the news.